I'm up in the air in a metal tube at 35,000 feet. I'm flying north at probably 500 miles an hour. Look ahead, the back of a seat. To my left and my right, slightly too close for comfort, other passengers. Look up, and there are serried rows of lights and shuttered overhead compartments. Oh, and a TV screen with a map showing a plane as big as Africa flying across somewhere. We're going from A to B. There's not the slightest indication of what airline I'm flying on. The seats started off comfy, but that's beginning to wear off now. And the person in front has just put the seat back, intruding into my private space. I'm flying economy class, of course.
Come fly with me. Come on, let's fly away.
Now, 10 years ago, I got so fed up with being encroached upon that I made a very public vow in a piece here on Radio 4 in From Our Own Correspondent that I would never again put my seat back in flight, and I haven't. And now air rage is making headlines. There's a new American gadget that fixes to the seat in front and blocks it from being shoved back in your face. Frustrated passengers have been pouring water over the people behind them, blocking their human right to repose on a plane flight. People care about this, and some people are trying to do something about it.
So you hear lots of banging and crashing, and that's people putting seats together.
Chris Brady is a founder and managing director of Acro Aircraft Seating. It's a business near Gatwick Airport, started in 2008. In an industry dominated by giants, Acro says it's now the fourth largest aircraft seat maker in the world. It employs 130 people, and they make thousands of seats every month, all of them for economy class. Chris Brady's business story is a memorable one. He started working life as an engineer with Virgin Atlantic, but eventually he saw an opportunity to start a company of his own, based on one particular gripe.
As well as being the managing director, I'm 6'2", and I've always hated sitting in economy seats. And our idea was to design a seat that had much better legroom than anything gone before, because I'm fed up of banging my knees on the seat in front. I also loathe reclining seats, particularly on a short-haul flight, when the chap in front bangs his seat back straight after takeoff. This seat appears on your nose, and goodness, what was that?
He's not the only one. Many of the economy seats that Acro makes don't recline. They have a fixed back. It denies the passenger in front the chance to recline, but protects the passenger behind and his or her knees from being encroached upon. Chris Brady lists the many complicated features that limit economy seating on planes. Weight, the pitch between the rows of seats, official regulations. But the main factor is the shape of the planes that the seats have to fit in.
If I take the much maligned Ryanair, they are always being punished, aren't they, in the press for having terrible seats and taking everything away from the passenger. But actually, if you look at their aircraft, they have a 737. The 737 is limited by statute to 189 passengers. You cannot carry any more than that. It's the law. They have 189. So does British Airways. So does everybody who operates one of these aeroplanes. So the amount of space I have, the seat pitch, the distance from one row to the next, is not really set by Ryanair. It's set by Boeing and the government. So what you get is about between 29 and 30 inches, depending on where you are on the aircraft, of space. Customers often say to us, have you got a wider seat? And we say, well, we have got a wider seat, but you haven't got a wider aeroplane. The problem is, if you take the 737, you know, that aircraft is still going, will be in production for another 20 years, but its fuselage is based on the 707. And the fuselage of the 707 was established in 1953. And the width of the aircraft is determined by the fuselage. I have to have a certain gangway dimensions by regulation down the middle of the aircraft. If I'm left with three seats on the left of the gangway, three seats on the right, the fuselage hasn't moved, so I divide that space by three and I come up with my seat width.
But people are getting bigger.
People are getting bigger. So we're stuck, aren't we? There's nothing we can do.
What about weight as a consideration, said to be enormously important now with fuel costs?
Well, it certainly is. But lightweight is only one of the dimensions of cost of ownership. You have to buy the seat, you have to fly the seat, and you have to maintain the seat.
What is the most expensive seat, roughly? What's the price range? What does the airline pay?
An economy seat. The cheapest seat you can buy would be a fixed-back seat for us, which would be about £1,100 per passenger place. So a triple seat costs you £3,300. And the most expensive seat to buy would be one with a seat-back TV system and adjustable headrest, for a long-haul seat, such as the ones we sold to Thomas Cook, and they would be anywhere between £1,800 and £2,000 per passenger, please.
That compares with a lot of the seats that are much posher in business class and first class, hugely more expensive.
Hugely more expensive. These sort of old-fashioned business-class seats that you'd recognise as a seat with a seat back and a legrest, they'd be between £10,000 to £15,000 a passenger place. And the ones that are now beds, the sort of thing British Airways and Virgin Atlantic have, transatlantic, would be £50,000 to £100,000 each.
What?
£50,000 to £100,000 a passenger place. So the top-tier one carriers, the Virgins, the BAs, the Cathays, the Emirates of this world, design their own business and first-class seats from scratch and commission them. Whereas economy seats, we design it and try and sell it.
Chris Brady's Acro is a fast-growing business rooted in economy class. But it's not hard to find other experts who know a lot about designing aircraft cabins and the seats that go into them. And London is a global centre for this kind of thing, a cluster of design firms specialising in aircraft interiors. One of them is Priestman Good. It was founded by Paul Priestman from his bedroom after he finished studying at the Royal College of Art. This company designed the original interior for the A380, the giant jumbo jet from Airbus. But who makes flying such an ordeal for so many of us mass travellers, Paul Priestman? Who stops flying from being nice? Airlines? Regulators? Designers?
One of the big issues is that the more seats you have, the cheaper the ticket. And of course you could get more leg room, but you'd have to pay more for that seat. And with a competitive market, a lot of airlines are thinking about that ticket price.
Yes, but look where they make their money. Not on the seats all jammed together at the back, but on the ample seats at the front where they can charge extra for them. It's a funny sort of conundrum, isn't it? Putting in another row of seats isn't going to make a radical difference to the money the plane makes, is it?
Well, it's very interesting because we look at the different configurations, and it's amazing if you actually take out a row of economy over a year, how much that will cost the company.
Thousands and thousands.
Many thousands of pounds. What some airlines are finding is that valued business class passenger that travels at the front of the plane uses his air miles and goes in economy. If he has a bad experience with his family going on holiday, that will have an effect on whether he wants to use the airline. So that's sort of had an effect on trying to improve the economy class seating. Seats are getting thinner, getting wider.
How can seats get wider? That's impossible.
Well, there are things you can do with the width of the arm and the width of the seat pad itself. People are getting larger, and that's something that we're having to think about. So we're eking out just getting every little bit we can for the passenger. One of them is to maximise knee room, you know, the pocket where you get all the literature in it. Move it away from your knees, seems quite obvious, so when it reclines it doesn't hit your knees. The other thing is to think about the technology that people have with them. At the moment, in some economy class seats, you have a screen. Maybe that's replaced by a place to hold your tablet or phone so you can watch your own movie.
So the era of in-flight entertainment may be a temporary one, may it?
It may be on its way out. It depends on the airline.
Paul Priestman of Priestman Good Designers.
We're in the hole there. We're just going to go to our workshop, which is over here.
In a workshop in West London, Adrian Berry shows me some of the work in progress at his company, Factory Design. It's been working with the airline industry for 17 years. This is where you can actually step into, well, a first-class cabin if you happen to be working on one.
Yes, exactly. So this is a workshop where we build mock-ups. At the moment, I can show you one over here, which is a mock-up of a bathroom. I shall just do a big unveil.
That's the nappy-changing facility.
Well, that's actually an additional seat, and the nappy-changing facility would be here.
When will this bathroom be in flight?
Probably 2019. It's quite a long period of development.
Back in Adrian Berry's office, we sit down for a chat with me on a symbolic chair. We're sitting here in the old Concorde seats that you designed a long time ago.
Yes, back in 98, 99, we started the project, and then, of course, there was all sorts of issues. But they did actually get to fly on Concorde, which was fantastic.
And this is a company that got into plane design, well, with a cunning weasel. How did it happen?
We were a very small and new startup company and realised at the time that our portfolio of work was probably not going to be what people wanted to see. So we decided to show the people that we were going to pitch to how people felt when they actually fly. Our clever ruse was to use bananas. So we sent a banana through the post wrapped up in a plastic bag, and we sent another banana through the post in a box, quite nicely wrapped. And of course, when we arrived, the banana that had gone through in the plastic bag was all squished and brown and unpleasant. The one in the box was a little bit bruised, but still pretty good. And we revealed the third banana, took it out of our pockets, and it was wrapped in a pink ribbon. And that represented first class. And the effect flying has on you as a person.
But you were an upstart design company. You didn't get the job, did you?
Well, we didn't get the job we pitched for, but they gave us another job, which was our first job in the airline world, which was on Concorde, which was a nice way to be let down.
You get on a plane and you know you're on a particular company's plane depending on whether you turn left or right at the door. The first class, the business class experience is a very different one from what goes on in the back of the plane, isn't it?
Yes. It costs you a lot more.
And you put a lot more effort into the designs at the front of the plane than is put into the designs at the back of the plane.
Absolutely not. Of course not, no. Particularly in economy, if we stick with economy, the key things that we're trying to do there are, A, yes, increase your physical space envelope around you.
So you could give people airspace by taking it the space out of the seat itself.
Exactly. And with clever ergonomic design, and we do seat trials and duration test trials with ergonomists, you can start to create seats which are lighter, have apparently thinner cushions but are more comfortable, and start to use the space, taking away the cushions, gives you to give it back to the passenger. I'm just going to go and say that whenever you introduce a new idea into a seat or a bathroom or a galley on a commercial airliner, it's a big deal because there's an enormous amount of hard work then has to go into process. Certification, G testing. It can take a year and a half, 2 years, and a lot of money, even a very simple little idea.
Certification, that's the regulators, get involved with materials and the design of the seats as well, do they?
Yes.
They test it to destruction?
Yes, 16G and 9G testing. That's actually the forces of gravity on the seats. Everything in the aircraft that is new goes through that process. The thing I think that surprised me most about working with aircraft is you work with these huge metal tubes and it comes down to 2 millimetres, 1 millimetre. It really is a very, very precise thing inside the aircraft. It is the biggest three-dimensional jigsaw puzzle I've ever seen.
Adrian Berry at Factory Design. To experience at first hand how an airline thinks about design, let's drop in on Virgin Atlantic's crew training centre close to Gatwick Airport. Nick Lusardi has a very specific sounding title. He's the airline's design manager for customer experience. He takes me on a little tour of a full-scale mock-up of a plane used for training. And on entering, we turn left, not something I normally do. Now, you're taking me to the front of the plane, so this is lie-down seats, in other words, beds. This is upper class, yes?
Yes, so this is our upper class configuration on the 747.
Let me sit down for a moment, because, yes, it's, of course, comfortable, and this is before the bed is rolled out. Showbiz at one end of the process, when you start thinking things up to be more dazzling than a new rival. This has to work in revenue terms, doesn't it? And the airline industry is full of people calculating revenue per seat per hour.
Absolutely. As a design team, we will look at the layout of passenger accommodation, and it's all finally worked out to make sure that this aircraft is viable. And it's not just about the seat count, it's about where you put galleys, where you put toilets, all of these little things, where stowage goes. It's a finely balanced animal.
Now, we're talking here in upper class, so this is a very different experience from what most people are going to fly. And this extraordinary thing about the airline industry is that the money is made at the front of the plane and up top, not at the back of the plane, where most people are flying. So the decisions about space and experience at the back of the plane, it's a very different experience from the showbiz element here at the front.
We don't really look at it that way. yes, there are more seats in economy, but it's all about how much our customers are willing to pay at the end of the day. If they would want to pay more money, then they can have a more substantial amount of real estate on the aircraft.
Well, that's how you think about it. Money buys you square footage.
Well, it does. It's the reality of the airline industry. That space within the aircraft, that's what we charge.
But before getting too comfortable, Nick Lusardi takes me through to economy, the bit I belong to and prefer. Ah, the back of the plane. Here we are. This is economy class.
This is economy at the back of economy at the moment. And this is one of our older seats.
Yes, that's all right, until the person in front of me brings the seat back. And there is now a trend in quite a lot thinner seats.
Absolutely. The trend has come from the choice of materials that are now at the seat manufacturer's disposal. So, for instance, carbon fibre, the technology has been used in F1, has now come into the aircraft industry in a big way. And that's allowed us to create much more rigid, thinner sectioned parts and lightweight parts.
Because everybody says that lightness is now a very important consideration in interior design inside an aircraft, and it can make a lot of difference in money terms to the viability of a flight, can't it?
Yes, it does. Every kilo counts on an aircraft. We have a set of algorithms that are produced within the company that work out what weight means for that particular aircraft from a fuel burn perspective. It's very difficult to kind of quantify. It's a bit of a science, a bit of a black art.
But you can knock, what, hundreds of thousands of pounds off the annual operating cost of a flight if you have lighter seats?
It definitely does make a huge, huge difference, especially when the economies of scale you're talking about in economy cabin. You can have 200 grams off a seat, but you divide that by 200 seats, then all of a sudden you've got a lot of weight. And then you divide that by 10 or 15 aircraft. It just scales up. And now, when you look at it on the surface, 200 grams pointed straight at the seat, that doesn't seem like very much. But what it actually means to the business, then, it's a huge amount of money.
What about this thing called pitch? Just explain pitch to me.
So pitch is a measurement between two fixed points. So if I was to show you on the seat, if the end of the arm here...
The end of that arm to the one in front.
So the end of this arm to the one in front, that is how you would measure pitch.
So you don't do it back to back, then?
As long as it's an identical point... That's how you measure pitch.
I mean, it's about leg room. Essentially, it's about leg room, isn't it?
It's about your personal space. It's about real estate. It's back to this real estate. It's not just about leg room. It's about the space in front of you, in front of your nose, and your perception.
W. H. Auden, the poet, said, "Just 16 inches from my nose, the frontier of my being goes." That's kind of
it's got
it,
a good
isn't
way of
it?
Being.
Yes,
exactly. Yes, exactly yes. Yeah. This is the large closet. It's for Boeing 777 aeroplanes, but it has a 16G attendant seat on the rear side.
It's a what?
An attendant seat that has to meet dynamic crash tests. And the inside, it has got some stowage compartments.
And this is near the business class at the end.
This is at the back of economy class.
Right. So yes. You can stow stuff in the back of economy class. I didn't even realise you were allowed to take your clothes off in economy class, but you can. This factory alongside Bournemouth Airport, AIM Aviation constructs the paraphernalia that airlines need to turn flights into what they would probably call passenger experiences. 1,000 people work for the group. John Heath is AIM Aviation's engineering director. And as he knows well, there have been significant advances in recent years in the materials used to build cabin interiors.
I was one of the two British engineers who offered the very first of these lightweight sandwich constructions to the Boeing company, and that was in 1983.
And that was a new material. You had to demonstrate it and argue for it. But what, they liked the weight argument straight away or what? How did you sell it?
Weight and lack of corrosion. In the previous days, materials were largely based on metals, largely aluminiums, and all aeroplanes unfortunately have humidity in them, and corrosion of aluminium materials is an issue. So the selling point for these fibre-reinforced composites was low weight and low corrosion.
Lightness is very much a key to the way you think about an interior now, isn't it?
Absolutely. Every single investment opportunity that the airline makes, in which is to invest money in the cabin, they have to balance the wow factor against the weight of what they're inventing.
And they're doing that all the time?
Continuously, yes.
John Heath shows me some of the highly customised galleys, cupboards and bars that you don't think much about when you board a plane, but he does.
It's known as a bar unit. This houses four meal trolleys and a decorative surface on the top, and it sits in the doorway, the entrance doorway, that all passengers see. This is actually a bit of unique customization for a Middle Eastern airline who's decided that instead of having all passengers walk through the tradesman's entrance, they're going to make it look more like entering into a lounge of a hotel.
It is extraordinary that you do enter the plane through the kitchen, and it looks like a kitchen. I mean, some of the stuff is already warming up in those aluminium ovens. Very off-putting for economy class people, isn't it?
It is. And some of the airlines have appreciated that, and the world is slowly changing.
Where's the drumbeat for all this coming from? Who calls the tune? The airlines want new and different all the time. Where do they get their ideas from? Aircraft seats, for example.
The most recent major change maker in aircraft seats was that British Airways introduced originally first-class seats that went flat, that made a complete flat bed. And then shortly after that, they introduced lie-flat business-class seats. And again, both of those inventions were by British designers contracted by the airline who were asked to look at making the aeroplane different. So it started with a design company who came up with the idea, and then we as engineers worked to make that engineers practicable and certifiable, installed in the aeroplanes, and the airlines watched the market very closely, and they found that the number of their passengers found this extremely attractive, and therefore other airlines had to follow suit.
John Heath at AIM Aviation. British designers and engineers seem to have a particular talent for small spaces. Another of the London cluster of cabin designers is James Park. He originally made his name designing the interior of a train, the Orient Express. That commission led Singapore Airlines to ask his firm, JPA, to refit the first-class cabin of its 747s. James Park told me about the evolution of this London design speciality.
I think there was ourselves and one other company who were among the first to develop business class and first class seating that deployed into a bed, and we started to look at aircraft interior solutions in a different way. Now, that may have been the seed that allowed the industry in London to grow into what it is today.
This has been quite a long evolution. If you look back at planes after the war, the luxury was flying itself, and the seating kind of represented sofas in a posh living room at home, didn't they?
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I think that the aviation industry was perhaps a little slow in developing and keeping in line with other developments on the ground. However, a lot of that is to do with the fact you are 30,000 feet plus above the surface of the earth. You are traveling at very high speed in a very light vehicle. And the technical challenges that are involved with developing something much more comfortable and bigger and heavier and putting it in an aircraft are really significant problems. And all of this, again, has to be kept in the context of the capitalization that's required for an airline, which is very high, and the margins on those returns are really very low. It's a high-risk business, and so the resources available for developing new product are really quite limited.
Then you've got materials. Materials are still changing in interesting ways, aren't they?
They are changing, and I think that it's quite possible that those changes will begin to accelerate. There's a lot of materials that are being developed that we can't use as yet.
And they've not been approved by the authorities.
And they haven't been approved by the authorities, so the aviation industry may well be the last to adopt some of these things. The most obvious one that everybody is talking about is graphene.
Clearly, it's carbon so thin and so strong.
It's one atom thick, you know, or thin. Absolutely, but very strong, and it's conductive, which is quite different from most other materials. It's also very low resistance in the way that it conducts power.
So, no need to have wires through the cabin anymore because the seats will conduct the signals?
In theory, yes. In practice, it may be different.
Across the work table from us is John Tai, JPA Design Director. He shows me some of the new materials now available to the interior designer.
This is more intriguing to the fingers than bubble wrap, actually.
Yes, it's quite a tactile material. This, is already in service in some military applications, fighter jets, essentially. So we're hopeful that we're going to get this in an application quite soon.
John Tai came to this design practice after working for one of the new airlines in the Gulf. He's got hands-on experience of what customers want.
When we're designing a business class cabin interior, or indeed a first or economy class, we spend a lot of time ensuring the passenger has joy within that flight process. So,
joy, what a lovely word to use in business.
There should be some moments of delight in that process. spending 12 hours in a confined environment, you should be discovering things on that journey. And the quality of the leather, the stitching, the materials is absolutely paramount.
But any new material has to go through the rigours of regulatory testing.
It does, it does. And it's very difficult and expensive to get anything on an aircraft.
Yeah, that implementation process takes how long and costs what sort of thing?
Often it can take a couple of years and it can cost several hundred thousand pounds.
But the process basically is you've got that pitch, which is what, 31 to 29 inches. That's very difficult to change. Everything has to happen within that particular space, doesn't it?
It does, and for most airlines, that pitch is driven by commercial decisions. And the passengers do actually have a part to play in this, because if they choose their airfares largely on price, which a lot of people understandably do, then they're somewhat complicit in the decision to make aircrafts full as possible, and in the lack of knee room that you get.
I've suddenly thought of a design solution to that, and that is use the back of the seat display to remind the specific passenger how much he or she paid for this experience.
Yeah, sometimes I do think it would be interesting to remind people just how cheap aircraft travel has become. Thousands of people that are involved in getting an airport and an airline in the sky every day. It's incredible to think that tickets are sold for such cheap prices, really.
Innovation is all very exciting, but there's one proposal that I hope will never, ever see the light of day. I mentioned it to Nick Lusardi at Virgin Atlantic. People are talking about windowless planes for the future, and I think that's attractive to aircraft manufacturers. Are they a good idea from the customer experience point of view?
You can create a faux environment, but there's no substitute for actually looking out of the window at something that's real. When you're coming into land in London and you're coming into Heathrow, and you see the London Eye, you see the Houses of Parliament, it still has that wow factor no matter how you flip it.
You say, I don't have a lot of choice, but I want to fly at the back of a plane because that's where you get the best views out of the windows, and views is what I want on a flight.
I can't see that going away quickly. It's a real key thing. People want to see the world, and we want people to see the world, because when you're cocooned in a cabin, and it can be quite an austere environment, and I think you want to remind people you're flying at 40,000 feet and you're flying at Mach 0.83, you know, whatever that might be. You want that sense of journey and that excitement, and we want to bring back some of that romance that used to exist from aircraft flying, because aircraft now, they're so good at flying, you don't feel like you're flying. That's the important part about the window, is that it does remind you you're in the air and you're at 40,000 feet.
It is not so long since flying anywhere was regarded as a seriously glamorous thing to do, but now it isn't, at least not in economy. To bring some of the glamour back to flying, I want you to promise me just one thing. Learn to sleep or relax upright, and never, ever again press that little button that shoves your seat back into someone else's face. Please.
Let's fly away, fly away.